Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 775. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself? How did the search for one Gigi Dolan go?
That came up empty. I will admit that at times I definitely was bored running around Disney and was actively paying attention to a looking out for any redheads that might be out and about, not there, not at Universal either. Although I'm not sure that I see too many Universal pictures, really. There's a lot of food pictures that I'm assuming is down in that area. Maybe it's somewhere else, but yeah, no luck with the Gigi Dolan hunt. Came up empty on that one, but there was plenty other fun to be had. I did get to talk to the Wookiee. I got to talk to Chewbacca, so that was pretty fun. him and him and Rey came over and talked to me whilst I was down there, so that was some fun character interaction for yours truly. Yep. So that was my extent of any type of fame, I suppose, brush in. Hey, Gigi Dolan, not one of the people pulled up to the main roster yet. this past Friday, Triple H continues to make waves with the WWE roster. And not only do they bring back one Karrion Kross, they immediately put him in a main event position. Should he lose whatever endeavor awaits him, he already is in a better spot because it A, looks like he kept his original NXT gimmick. I think that's for the best. I still think it didn't always make complete sense, but hey, you know, it's better than what he had on the main roster.
Oh, you mean it's better than that Red Helm and the S&M gear?
Yeah, and his wife not introducing him.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a better presentation for whatever that's worth. Never a favorite of mine. I don't really get it. He's not a bad worker, but he's not really that good. He's kind of a big guy, but he's not that big. He'll especially be exposed against the likes of Reigns and McIntyre. The gimmick makes no sense, because I don't know if, is he supposed to be supernatural or not? Is Scarlett supposed to be a witch? I don't know these things. They never bothered to explain these things. And his run ended very, very poorly. First with that night where every 5'8" dude in the building decided to talk shit right to his face, and he just stood there and took it. Then there was the main roster run, and I will put run in quotation marks, where he lost his first match to Jeff Hardy.
It was an interesting place to see him vaulted to right off the bat.
I don't dislike him as much as a lot of people do, because a lot of people really, really hate that man. But you gotta reap it. After how his last run ended, you have to rebuild. Especially since, now that he's grown his hair out, some people may not even recognize him.
Oh.
so he looks different.
I always find it interesting when someone who does have hair chooses actively for a number of years to shave their head.
I do think the bald head was a better look for him. He looks way too much like a regular guy with his shaggy dog haircut. Or Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, or whatever. It's a Shaggy, I think.
yeah. It looks pretty close to it.
It doesn't really fit whatever the heck the character is supposed to be. Whatever that is. And it's once again, I'm not against giving the guy another chance. But to vault him into the main event right from the start, with Roman Reigns in the ring, just with that look, he gets in his eye, he gets on his face, when you know he's not buying into what he's being asked to do by creative. We've seen it before. This man has tells when he is just thinking that this is bad.
It's one where, and I mean, there's been a lot of conjecture out there because nothing has been set in stone at this point, correct? It's still just Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle, yes. As we know, yes, currently.
As we know it right now, yes, that's what it is. Now, why they would introduce Cross, if it's going to stay that way, I have no idea. Could we be getting could this turn into a triple threat match? Could this turn into a triple threat match where two falls, where both titles are on the line, so that we can end this nightmare? By having neither Roman Reigns or Drew McIntyre take a pin?
Yeah, all of these things, and that's the one thing to kind of tie it in with Cross is that I guess I don't see him beating either McIntyre or Reigns at this juncture.
No, it is almost like he's being set up to take a fall here. I guess, and then it's really supposed to, like, he can build him later or what have you, or he doesn't want to sacrifice someone who's going to be more in his immediate plans, but we know that Cross has always seemed like a Triple H guy and a Triple H project.
Oh,
the fact that he brought him back here should be testament to that. But
right,
no. There's I don't think Karrion Kross is going to be either WWE champion and or Universal champion anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm with you that they probably need some more time with him to really get people to buy a victory for him in a championship. Right. Like, unless you're in, and obviously he isn't in this position, so I mean, it's almost not worth mentioning, but you know, if he had the briefcase, it would be a different situation that we'd be talking about here, but he didn't come back that early, you know, and it's just, yeah, you kind of need a little more momentum than what Cross has currently. And yeah, I'm also with you that, yeah, his gimmick's always been a little bit vague. It's a little vague. And yeah, hopefully it has a little more definition moving forward, but I'm not exactly counting on it. Because, yeah, Triple H did seem to like it in NXT when it was being run.
Yeah. Triple H is, you know, he did that with Ember Moon. Giving someone this quasi-supernatural, quasi-spiritual gimmick that really didn't that they never fully fleshed out. One thing with Ember Moon was like, is she supposed to be a werewolf? I don't know.
Oh.
Like, yeah. Triple H is, he's into things like that. You can tell he's into, like, occult things and things of that nature. But he never puts all the pieces together with the characters he creates. It's not fully fleshed out like an Undertaker or a Kane. Or even Bray Wyatt. Wyatt, for that matter, for what he, for, even though there are moments with him where it's like, you kind of scratch your head, and it just seemed like, you know, a lot of word salad, but still more fleshed out than, say, than Cross has ever been.
Yeah, like, you always understood Wyatt's motivations. You know, he'd try to disguise it in riddles a lot. Sometimes it was just kind of straightforward. But, yeah, most of the time, riddles. And you kind of got the gist of the riddles by what was being said. And, yeah, you kind of knew his intentions without knowing them. Just setting down an hourglass. That part is still a little hokey for me.
It is very hokey. And then he says tick-tock, but an hourglass doesn't say tick-tock. A clock says tick-tock. Hourglasses say nothing. Maybe I guess, but yeah. The whole presentation has never fully been fleshed out. It doesn't really make sense. The Vince McMahon regime was not right for what they did to him. That felt like a political hit.
Oh, and, yes.
But that still doesn't mean he's got main event superstar potential all over him, written all over him either.
Yeah, and I mean,
I don't mind the idea of bringing him back to give him a chance.
Oh.
But putting him in this position is going to expose him, could very well expose him quick. It's, you know, being in the ring with big guys like Reigns and McIntyre will expose that he's maybe 6'2" at most.
Yeah.
You know, he's not wrestling Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole anymore.
Well, yeah, and McIntyre, I think we've mentioned quite a few times, like, he's one where it's just like, no, you're just a mutant, man. What the hell? Like, Reigns is a big guy, but I think McIntyre is 6'8 or something like that. It's just like, come on, man. Like, you shouldn't be built like that and be that tall. Like, that just doesn't seem right. It'll be interesting. Like, they did kind of avoid, because he attacked McIntyre from behind, they did a good job of kind of hiding the size disparity for the time being. Like you said, though, like, there's going to be a nowhere to hide policy as soon as you get in the ring. But you can hide that stuff otherwise. Trying to be tough guy gimmick, it works. Obviously, I mean, the one that I'm coming off of the top of my head is, you know, Taz being shorter but still having a tough guy gimmick. It's still a little bit of a hard sell for him in this situation, like you said, against McIntyre and Reigns, who are definitely in the upper echelon of big guys for the WWE, honestly. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that moving forward. Speaking of people showing up at end of shows, what are we to think about one Dexter Lumis showing up at the end of Raw?
That was a really well done thing. You see the police swarming someone, handcuffing someone, then you see his face. That was so well done. So well done, a lot of people, even some people in the media, questioned if it was real or not, or whether they accidentally grabbed someone while he was making his debut, and that wasn't all set up. Because that and all that, all the car shenanigans that were going on in the background of those backstage interviews, I'm fairly certain that's all related.
Oh. But there's been no news that is all related as of this juncture, correct?
Okay, first of all, foremost, Kevin Owens is doing a backstage promo, and this is his usual good promo. Meanwhile, in the background, a bunch of people are standing around this car that's obviously been in an obvious accident. This wrecked. Looks like it. Maybe it was a Trans Am. I'm not really sure what it was. That's what it looked like to me. And then during Alexa Bliss and Asuka's interview, where they're also interrupted by Bayley, Io, and Dakota, they're trying to load this thing onto onto a wrecker, and then people start running because apparently it's about to blow up. But we never get any more updates than that. You know what? It was weird, but you know what? It worked. It was definitely something intriguing that kept you hooked. Like, why is nobody in the first segment? Why is nobody acknowledging this? What is going on? And then, you know, and then the announcers don't acknowledge what happened after Alexa Bliss acknowledged it. these people running faster. So yes, I do believe that the car thing and the Loomis thing are going to be related. Maybe they won't be, but once again, it was something out of a playbook you would have seen maybe 20 years or longer ago.
Oh,
it was a mystery. It was a hook. So, you know, good for them for getting that, for doing that. I mean, it's a little weird that, once again, nobody mentioned it. But I guess that it's also, you know, that mysterious voice in the headset is telling everybody not to mention it. You could say something along those lines. That, you know, they were instructed not to talk about it. But no, that was all very fun. Loomis? On the main roster, gonna be interesting. He has been doing character stuff was doing character stuff for about 2 years or more in NXT. Never will be the greatest in the ring, but he was an entertaining part of NXT, and maybe even the most entertaining part of NXT in the last year or so.
Yeah, he could pull, I guess, entertainment-wise, I mean, he can't match longevity at this point, but R-Truth is who I'm thinking of right off the bat. Like, if he keeps the entertainment gimmick going, he could stick around for a long time. Despite, you know, his limitations.
The silent killer who draws. There's a number of people who could, you know, very easily, very, very easily and very well play off of him. Thinking about Kevin Owens right off the top of the head. that could be hilarious. I mean, unless you really want to, they want to play it like he's serious and dangerous in a heel fashion. They could do that, but he really found his stride as the unlikely babyface and unlikely love interest of Indy Hartwell. That was in the last year of NXT Black and Gold. That was some of the best stuff. That they, you know, Gargano, Candice, Indy, even Awesome Theory, I guess, and Loomis were definitely the highlight of that last, you know, 6 months to a year before the big changeover. And it's a shame that it was Loomis's weirdness and his story with Indy was downplayed in pretty much immediately after the dawn of 2.0.
And he was let go, you know, like it's been a while because I feel like he got let go pretty early on.
Yeah, it was.
In relative terms.
I don't think they've really released anybody in 2022. Still 2021, I believe. Yes.
Yeah. So. He's been gone for a minute. Because Indy Hartwell has not had a good time in NXT since then.
No, she has not. we've mentioned that. My belief is, that she has absolutely regressed as a wrestler, being left on her own without her storyline husband A and her former tag team partner.
Yeah, we will see if that changes in the future or not. I guess it was in some ways a little surprising. There is, since Raw was in Cleveland this past week, everyone maybe expected one Mr. Johnny Gargano to show up, and that did not happen, considering that we've been talking about the way.
Lumis was released at the end of April, so they did do a round of cuts.
Oh, okay, that was just this year
That was just this year. Because I was starting to think about it. It hasn't been that long since Indy Hartwell's been floundering. Yeah, okay. But yeah, Johnny Gargano in Cleveland, I think a lot of people expected it. I think a lot of people expected it with Ciampa in such a big match, and then Ciampa again making his presence felt during the final match of the evening, but no, it did not happen yet. It's very, very intriguing situation surrounding Mr. Gargano. He has not wrestled.
I believe I saw it was 8 months, if I'm not mistaken.
For a guy who lived, ate, and breathed wrestling his whole life, that's kind of amazing. I mean, and I'm pretty sure, Candace gave birth a while ago. I know he's enjoying, seems like he's enjoying being a dad. I mean, good for him. Yeah, Gargano hasn't wrestled since that NXT War Games in December. I mean, I guess, being a dad, good for him. I guess him and Candace were able to sack some money away, although her contract coming due didn't happen till a little while later, so they were, so she was still getting paid because they weren't going to fire her pregnant. It's a very, every time, multiple times since December, I believe AEW and WWE have been in Cleveland, and he just doesn't show up. Where do you think he would show up? He's done one appearance in AEW, in Cleveland, obviously, or the Cleveland surrounding area. Because I believe the show was in Akron that he actually appeared in.
I was gonna say. Yeah. Okay. Go forward.
I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sorry I got the geography of your state wrong.
It's about...
Akron is nowhere near Cleveland.
Not nowhere. It's still about an hour drive or so.
Oh, an hour? That's the area. Trust me. I'm from Detroit. Everything within an hour, possibly even more, is still considered Detroit, or the Detroit area, so... So he's done one appearance, I believe. The only appearance he's done is with his home promotion.
Yep.
And he's done nothing else. He's given no indication where he's leaning. But again, these key dates keep coming and going without any sign of him. Triple H is back in charge of WWE, is totally in charge, not back in charge, totally in charge of WWE Creative, and in charge of hiring, both, and we still don't see Mr. Johnny Gargano.
Do you think that, I guess this is a general question, that Trips is going to go on a spending spree? Or do you think this is just going to be kind of limited spot hires? Because, it's been one of those things that in some ways I've forgotten about who... Dakota Kai was maybe the bigger one. I guess I'd forgotten that she was out there in some ways. I forgot that some of these people that were let go from NXT and the main roster were still out there to be had.
Yeah, no, I mean, Dakota Kai was a prime pickup for anybody, but and until a week and a half ago, she had no idea that her futures were gonna turn out the way her future was gonna turn out the way that it did. She had every indication that Vince McMahon did not get her. She was never going to advance past NXT. She requested her own release, and then Triple H is up in charge of everything and wings what has been called a very last minute deal to get her to come back in. With the gimmick stable idea that was actually proposed to and pitched to Vince by Bayley and turned down. So that's an amazing story right there. But
oh yeah,
who knows who we'll see come back? I mean, I saw today there that the, you know, rumors of maybe Braun Strowman. Which that would not surprise me. Johnny Gargano at any point would really not surprise me. I'm just trying to think who else is out there.
Because
maybe Tegan Knox, who didn't really get a fair shake.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if she's back. Bray Wyatt is still an intriguing one. I know that I brought the name up earlier. I guess I do know that he's still out there somewhere, but I also feel like news of his whereabouts is kind of calmed down. Like, yeah, I feel like there's that movie stuff right after he got released, and
yeah,
not much since.
That's a very low budget horror. We'll probably never get ahead of a wide release, and then he put out a rambling post on social media this week that it's just some of these guys, him, Braun, without the WWE machine behind them, and they're just left to their worst instincts. Not good. Not good at all. And, you know, Bray Wyatt's at least got some creativity, of course, obviously. Oh my God. Braun has just exposed himself to being just a dumb bunk country bumpkin. Like, that guy can't, without WWE Creative telling him what to do, that guy, I'm not sure that guy can tie his boots. not exactly a Rhodes Scholar right here.
Yeah, I guess I don't follow enough to know one way or another, honestly. Because I don't think we've unfollowed him on Twitter on Stunt Granny, but I definitely don't follow him on Instagram, because why? And I do feel like I've at least seen some word of his thoughts out there, and I just roll my eyes and and move along. Knowing that it's his opinion is not going to be in agreement with mine. We'll leave it that way. We'll leave it there. Those are some of the bigger names. I will be interesting to see how many of them do come back. The WWE could, I mean, we've kind of mentioned it, their main event scene definitely took a hit, you know, with Randy Orton going down, and who else was out there for a while? Well, and just Roman Reigns' general absence, Brock Lesnar's possible not being around for a while, at a minimum.
But there is the Saudi show still coming in early November. So I imagine we'll see Brock for that, unless they let go of the idea that Brock is just some type of great attraction over there. And it's not just the WWE brand, but they usually like to put those shows as all hands on deck. So I could see Brock there. Otherwise, I don't know if there's any real need to have him at Survivor Series, or I think they're still doing TLC in December, or doing it again, back to doing it again in December. I'm not really sure.
No.
Then of course there's Rumble, which of course will be back for that, and hopefully by WrestleMania we'll get Brock in something really, something very new for him. I am once again very much looking forward to Brock Lesnar wrestling, getting in the ring with some of these new people on the roster, some of these new big fellas, and seeing what we can create.
I don't need to see him and Reigns again, and I don't really need to see him and McIntyre again. I know that the time frame for him and McIntyre at this juncture is kind of a while ago. Still don't need to see it.
Well, I guess there's still no TLC on the docket for December.
Any pay-per-view at all? Or are they taking December off?
There looks like they're... It looks like they're not going to have a December pay-per-view at all again, which would be the second year in a row. And you know what? It's the worst month of the year. You can do the NXT War Games special unless Triple H is going to get War Games to be moved to be becoming a Survivor Series type of thing. You know what? Wouldn't be the worst idea, because the whole Raw versus SmackDown idea is just done. even if you get this championship situations ununified, or should say split, what are you going to do? Reigns versus McIntyre again? I would like to see them do a little something. You could, and don't necessarily have to totally bring back all the elimination matches, but if you want to do War Games on the main roster, you know, you certainly put the Bloodline, maybe plus one person on the other, and the babyface on the other side. Do Bayley and Friends versus Bianca and Friends, especially if Becky's going to be back by then. We can have a good time with that.
Yes, a reimagining of Survivor Series would be kind of a nice thing to have here moving forward. I guess it is kind of interesting. These conversations are actually on the table now. How quickly we can go from saying, yeah, we know what Vince likes. And we got some wiggle room here now to see what old Trips comes up with.
We already have an idea through NXT and who we've seen come back, who his favorite children are, and through some of the things they did in NXT, including doing War Games, using WCW pay-per-view names. You can see where Triple H's affections lie.
Yeah.
And also why Vince probably wasn't happy with it a lot of the time. Well, Vince has a lot of time right now. Not to stew about it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of the few shakeups, honestly, that I don't know how much of a dent Triple H can make, honestly, but if the WWE did kind of stop the bleeding a little bit within the losing viewers kind of situation, kind of breaking out of the old formula is just got to be one way to do it, I would think. Like, or at least to give it a try.
They got nothing to lose by, well, I mean, there's a stable, profitable business, of course, but implementing change, you know, incrementally, can only help. You know, you don't do everything at once. we're already seeing different some different styles, different types of TV being done. You know, more people interacting with each other, longer matches, seemingly a little bit more planning ahead. You know, announcing a match 2 weeks ahead. Well, sometimes they did that. You know, still before. But you're seeing different. It definitely feels like there's a greater energy and sense and a sense of urgency with what's going on more than we've had before. Where, you know, like last week's Raw. This week's Raw wasn't as much of it, but last week's Raw, you know, you have actually, there was some of it, I should say, but last week's Raw really stuck out to me with, you know, Seth Rollins walking out at, you know, 8:40, and Edge walking out at, like, 9:40. We're not compartmentalizing this show. And we're not telling you, at 8, 9, 10, and then the last 15 minutes or so, those are the only segments you actually need to watch. Things might happen between 8:15 and 8:45. Things might happen between 9:15 and 9:45. Things might happen between 10:15 and 10:45. I mean, that is, in many ways, the hallmark of how I think Vince was handling the creative of especially Raw.
It was hit these certain points. Spots.
Yeah, and points where you could just check out for up to 45 minutes and watch some other show, pop something on Netflix, and then come back, and you will have missed nothing important.
Yeah, I will admit that it was kind of easy a number of times to just do a YouTube show. Because they show enough on there that, you know, it shows you how much you can distill that show down into, you know, 3-minute clips.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's it does help when there's a little element of randomness to the show that you don't know exactly when to expect the big right. moment in the show.
Yes, and that is maybe the biggest thing that's missing from wrestling. It's the ingredient that made the Monday Night War era special. Because it wasn't, people, you know, romanticized a lot of the more tawdry elements of the Attitude Era.
Oh.
That was part of it, but also, and, you know, obviously Nitro with the NWO had this element too, the feeling that anything could happen. Maybe it wouldn't happen. Maybe nothing would happen. But anything could happen at any point on that show.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's pretty fun to have that element back at play. For sure. I'm trying to think of other things, other big things there. Was there anything else on SmackDown that really stood out before getting to kind of a short Raw breakdown? And
that was a long time ago.
Well, I'm buzzing through the review right now. And there wasn't, there isn't a whole lot. Shayna Baszler wins a chance at, because it's against Liv Morgan, isn't it?
That's against Liv Morgan, Clash of the Castle.
So that was kind of one of the bigger moments, I think, of SmackDown. I wasn't really surprised they put Raquel Rodriguez in the we don't want you to challenge Liv Morgan, but we're going to still have you look good by having you beat 3 opponents before finally succumbing to a 4th.
They've done that a bunch of times, and I don't think it was any less effective than it was with Raquel. She just doesn't have it. And she's a big part of the downturn of NXT when she actually won that title. I don't get with her. She just doesn't have it. I mean, they have made people's careers with that gauntlet spot where you beat a bunch of people but then succumb to the end. They've made careers with that spot. And sometimes the person actually goes all the way and wins the whole thing too. But every once in a while they do that. I mean, it lit a fire under Seth. It's what sparked Kofi Mania. They've done it to huge success. Raquel just doesn't have the moveset or the charisma to pull it off to make it interesting.
I at least hope for her benefit they get away from the old smiling Raquel gimmick here.
That doesn't suit her at all. And of course, gotta flex the back. And of course, that was a Triple H thing too. Triple H started that with her. The SmackDown creative team just continued. So and added the never stop smiling. You're just happy to be here. Don't stop smiling. Don't you dare stop smiling.
Yeah, I do think that there are ways to tweak the gimmick that maybe things work in her favor a little bit more. I'm still with you. Like, I'm not sure that she's gonna get included in that upper echelon of women at any juncture currently. You know, I'm definitely not putting her up there with the Baileys and the Sashas and the Charlottes. Obviously we've kind of talked about it, the Bianca being up in that category finally here. You know, Raquel has some work to do before she gets to that stratosphere. But yeah, Shayna Baszler seems like a natural fit to take, have Liv Morgan fight against at Clash at the Castle. You can get another win under Liv Morgan's belt before she, I still don't think that her reign is going to be terribly long, but I also don't see Shayna Baszler being the one to dethrone her. What do you think?
No, Liv needs to beat somebody clean.
No.
And someone I guess the audience perceives as tough because she is, and is Ronda Rousey's best friend. I think that makes a lot of sense. Liv needs to get. If they're gonna keep her a babyface. She needs a defining win over Shayna. And anyone else she meets until unless they want to take it off of her sooner than later, because that SummerSlam finish and her accepting it, that's the worst part. Her accepting the win that way, that's really hurt her. She was getting booed on SmackDown. Maybe it was just one crowd. Maybe we'll get back. We'll get back to normal this week. Maybe that was just an outlier. But that finish at SummerSlam, some people were praising it. I didn't like it. No. And then when she went on SmackDown and her promo, let's say the least, and when she went out for her promo on SmackDown and had no problem accepting a win like that, when she actually tapped, babyfaces don't do that. You never put a babyface in a situation where they tap, but the referee doesn't see it. And as far as like the phantom pin type situation, very rarely could that ever be used to justify a babyface retaining a title to get to a rematch.
Yeah, she got put in a terrible spot. I'm with you. Like, that, to me, you know, you are seeing the referee, seeing and hearing the referee counting. All that you need to do, despite how painful it is, you know that all you need to do is gut out the three count.
Yeah, that was stupid.
And if you have her tap immediately after that, like, if there's a three count, then a tap, you know, to have her acknowledge how painful it is, I could live with that. Yeah, what they had her do, not a fan at all. And, yeah, like, it won't help your character. When you're like, yep, I really did lose that match. And it's just like, okay. Sure. You know, that doesn't give you anything to get behind.
No, it doesn't. Yes, no. So, not good. We'll see if crowds pick up on booing her. I hope they don't, because I genuinely like Liv Morgan a lot. So and I know she didn't, you know, she didn't book that finish. So yeah, hopefully she can move on from that. And yes, she needs a win. You know, a clean in the middle. Over someone of Shayna Baszler's statue. And if they're not, if they're never going to be confident enough to give Liv Morgan a relatively clean win over Ronda Rousey, then I guess Ronda should probably win the title back, or you just don't do that match again. But they're obviously set up to do that match again.
It would seem weird if they didn't do that match.
Yeah,
you know, it. Yeah. Kind of seems inevitable at this point. Yeah. Because there's just the Kofi stuff and the Roman Reigns stuff there on SmackDown. I'm going to say it. We kind of talked about them a little bit, but I forgot how much I missed Bailey on the microphone. I will go that way. Even when she screws up, she does a good job of covering for her own mistakes. And I am quite glad that Bailey is back.
Yeah, definitely. We're definitely all glad Bailey's back. This trio with EO and Dakota is definitely working. Faction warfare, if you want to call it that, always works. And it's working here. You have, you know, brawls every week. You can mix and match people against each other in singles and tags for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. You still keep Bianca and Bailey against each other in a one-on-one match for the title. And you kick that can down the road a little while. No, all good things. This is definitely something that's firing on all cylinders.
I guess in the scheme of things here, do you think Triple H thought that Ezekiel was firing on no cylinders, and that's why he got beat up this week?
Yeah, unfortunately, Kevin Owens' situation towards Money in the Bank and cost of it not being Money in the Bank was definitely a factor in this running out of steam. probably as great as Kevin Owens was throughout this whole thing. Probably for the best for him to get his edge back and be a killer again. Definitely in need of some big time heels in that way. And Ezekiel / Elias, especially Ezekiel in this gimmick where it's like he is this rookie just who's only learning how to wrestle, even though of course he's Elias, but it's just it probably isn't anything long term, and I don't think he's ever really great in the ring. And there's probably always going to be a ceiling there. So yeah, I wish they'd gotten a more satisfying conclusion to the storyline because I really really did enjoy it. But it is probably time to move on now.
I was just kind of like you said, like it felt like the Ezekiel thing was kind of limited. For the most part, what I saw was fun. But yeah, like, where do you go with this, aw shucks, I'm just happy to be here as a wrestler guy? Like, that doesn't do a whole lot for you. You know? And you can't really go anywhere with it. So, I would be more than, I'm happy with Kevin Owens being mean again. He is a very good jokester, but if you need someone in the main event scene, that's an easy way to dial up a main event player. And honestly, like, as much as I understand why Kevin Owens signed that contract under Vince McMahon, the contract extension, I still think that he's probably better off with Triple H at the helm. Because I do think that he has a chance of getting a championship match again at this point. Like, I didn't think that was really ever going to happen under Vince. Like, he got his championship reigns and that was that, and he was just going to be kind of a featured player. Good spot to be in.
No, I mean, I don't think in any way, shape, or form Kevin Owens regrets resigning with WWE after he got Austin at WrestleMania. He himself probably could have retired after that and been happy, but that after the way everything his entire career had went, but. No, I think he could definitely be put in better situations. They're obviously building up Lashley in the U.S. title. Once a babyface is the top champion on Raw, however long that takes to happen, he's definitely one of those people that you can always get a pay-per-view or two out of as a challenger. If nothing else.
Yeah.
He could face Drew if Drew McIntyre ends up coming over to Raw with the WWE Championship. If, say, way down the line, it ends up being, say, Cody Rhodes. Cody and Kevin Owens could have a hell of a feud over a top championship. Lashley and KO. Had matches against each other, but never a big match with big stakes, one-on-one on a big show. So you could certainly do that. Yeah, Owens is definitely, someone who, yes, he can do comedy, and yes, he can excel at it as good as anybody ever. But he also can turn that switch in the other direction and be deadly serious, and be a deadly serious, you know, main eventer.
Yeah. And they are in need of that currently. Someone who definitely will not be a main eventer and needs to be brought up. Dominic Mysterio continues to get beat up by Rhea Ripley. Between 1 to 10, how much are you entertained by this continuing to happen?
Oh, what a lucky guy.
Yeah, he has been... That has been a common sentiment. That is for sure. I don't know if Dominic is counting himself as lucky, though.
Well, did anybody actually see Dominic get beat up? I mean, we know where this is going. And honestly, why would they want him in their group? Tell me.
I have no idea.
What does he actually bring to the table? It's again, I mean, yes, Jeremy and I had definitely had a big talk last week about one Mr. Dominic Mysterio, and there's just nothing happening there. I mean, he looks goofy. He can do a few spots right, but you can tell he was never fully trained in the basics. Like, he runs in a weird pattern. He seems to, at times, avoid contact with the ropes or the turnbuckles. It's just, he's very awkward.
Oh. Yeah, he's been on the main roster for kind of a while, and I feel like it seems weird to accuse him of not getting the basics when I'm 99% sure he at least went to Lance Storm's school, am I not mistaken?
I don't know if it was Lance Storm. It might have been Brian Kendrick, or it might have even been Chavo Guerrero. I'm not sure who actually trained him. And I'm sure Ray was involved too. He never went to the Performance Center. I do know that. Well, at least you score that one for the Performance Center. yeah, it's just... You know what? Without Seth Rollins doing the old, all right, what can you do, kid? All right, we'll build the match around that. When he doesn't have someone that good leading the way in a low-pressure situation with no people in the stands, let's keep that in mind. Dominic Russell, this is his first entire year in the business with no people. So it was just like one big rehearsal for him. Ever since they went back in for the crowds is when he's gotten exposed week after week after week. He's not getting better, but I think he's regressing. Yeah. And he doesn't really, you know, people don't like him as a personality because they've been setting up this breakup a father and son for like a year. So we've had a year of Dominic being passive aggressive, of whining and complaining, of being disrespectful to his father, and they never pulled the trigger on an actual turn. So he's an annoying, whiny baby face. And now when he turns heel, after he's been exposed so much, no one's gonna care. And this, you know, Judgment Day thing, not the greatest thing in the world. Especially since it was always, as I said, it was always kind of starting on a faulty premise, such as what that just turned in the first place.
Yeah.
But Finn Balor seems like he's not, he's just not fit for this. I think Priest does a pretty good job, but none of these two, either the two, or maybe even including Rhea Ripley, none of them really shine as any kind of a leader in this whole thing.
Well, it feels strange to me that Rhea Ripley's the leader, but I guess you're supposed to assume that it's Finn Balor since he's the one who got everyone to turn on Edge, question mark. And Damian Priest is the one kind of doing the first part of the promo and Balor's finishing it off. I mean, it's weird that there isn't a whole lot of hierarchy there as far as that group goes. And it would really help to establish some, honestly. And I guess that's another thing, just with Dominic himself. He's been on TV for like 2 years now, and I guess I still don't feel like I know him at all.
No, there's there's nothing to him.
You know, he's Rey's son. Like that's the gimmick. Like I know that, and I agree with you that he's been passive aggressive at certain points, and then they've backed off of it, and then he's done it again, and they haven't. But that still isn't really much of a personality, especially when it kind of gets turned on and off like that, and then you've just got to be happy that you're with your dad again. I'm not sold on him as a future superstar. I do think he's been put in some pretty terrible spots, and I don't think moving him to Judgment Day is going to help him out at all. Like, it doesn't help them out at all. It doesn't help him out at all. Like, I'm not quite sure why you go through with that. You know, it does not seem beneficial for anyone. Because Damian Priest and Dominic being the tag team seems kind of weird, and Finn Balor taking a back seat and being in the tag team, and I guess I'm assuming letting Damian Priest be the singles champion would be kind of strange too.
Yeah. None of it works like that. No, because once again, there's no future in Dominic at this point. He would have to go somewhere else. I mean, not even like NXT. I mean, he would have to go to Mexico or, come and then come back, learn some exciting moves, get more of his. Well, I guess Lucha Libre is not exactly known for its, its basics and what we consider
Oh.
American wrestling, but come back under a mask and in a full costume. Because if you're gonna wear no sleeves, please don't skip arm day either.
Oh, Chris out here body shaming people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. Like there is just not a whole lot defining about Dominic Mysterio in any positive way. So yeah, you need to do something about that. I guess the only other thing that I was seeing from Raw, well, I don't know if there's anything else really from Raw. Bobby Lashley versus Ciampa was a really good match. The outcome is kind of what you expected, though, with
Yeah.
a Bobby Lashley retention. Because yeah, the almost handicap match was whatever. I did kind of think to myself, I'm like, ah, the Triple H squash match is back. That was one thing I did remember a lot about NXT, honestly, because they pretty much had two squash matches every week. I would not be surprised to see this becoming a regular thing, not necessarily for almost every week, but for someone to help build up some wins on TV. It's a good way to do that. Even if you know it's a gimme win.
Yeah. Yeah, almost could use a lot of those. Definitely. You have to undo the damage to Lashley if you did.
Uh-oh. Yeah, he needs at least a little bit of a rebuild.
Yeah. Once again, it's an easier rebuild than, say, a Cross, because he is so damn huge.
Yeah, being 7'3" affords you certain advantages in life.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's that. I guess we didn't really talk about the match. Another match that was at least pretty solid, AJ Styles versus The Miz. It closed the show. We did get the Dexter Lumis thing at the end of it. What did you think about the match itself?
Good match. I like the match a lot. It was because keep in mind, it's about 9:45 Eastern when the introductions for Ciampa versus Lashley start, and you're thinking, the hell is closing this show? You know, in the first 2 hours, much like last week, you know, the women's stuff is all over it, but there's nothing more to do with it. And then you do the highly touted U.S. title match at around the top of the third hour. What's going to close this show? And they use that U.S. title match to transition to a Miz AJ Styles match to blow off their feud that's been going on for a little while. You know, straight babyface win. You know, Styles overcomes the interference of Ciampa, essentially a 2-on-1 situation all by himself with no help. And Miz takes another loss. I know they think that guy can always talk his way back to getting his heat back, but man, you might want to give him a win or two after this.
Yeah, he's teetering on some close to some deep water there.
Yeah,
like you said, like there's a fine line between being able to eat L's and eating too many of them, and he's kind of getting towards the eating too many of them at this point. So here's to him getting stringing together a couple of at least decent W's here in the near future. Anything to talk about? There is a lot of AEW. There is Rampage, which I did watch, and then there is Battle of the Belts, which I did not watch.
Oh, I definitely did not watch that. I would be.
So, anything to talk about on either of those fronts? That
Rampage. I could watch Rampage for the first time in a while. I was certainly sucked in by the Jon Moxley Mance Warner match.
Oh,
because I, you know, have seen Mance Warner wrestle before, and I know who he is. Many people apparently did not, and made that opinion known that, you know, who is this guy fighting Moxley on TV, the world champion on TV. And I understand. I, you know, they make a good point. AEW, they set the table a little bit for Mance Warner, but still, you have a guy come in his first match in the company, and it's against the world champion, and he loses. You don't really answer, you know, how do you justify giving him this match? I get the complaints, but it was a match that intrigued me, because once again, Warner's one of those guys who you think of as being a good opponent for Moxley, who was out there. They had a good match. I liked it. There was a main event street fight, which was fine. Swerve to Our Glory, or Your Glory.
Yeah.
Picked up a win over Tony Nese and the other guy?
Josh Woods.
Josh Woods, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Anything you clothe with a Tony Nese and whatever's going on with Mark Sterling right now, I'm not going to care much.
It's a little bit bummed that he's with them, honestly. I liked Josh Woods in the fading days there of ROH.
I'm not familiar with him, so, and this not really helping me get too acclimated with him.
Yeah, not Nese a good spot to be in.
Because Nese has been on national TV about 6 years now, and he's still a blank slate. And Sterling's a very low rent act. So, yeah, not the best of beginnings for Woods, but he's young. He seems hungry, so hopefully he'll get more opportunities. And, my God, were we all wrong when we thought, when AEW was first started, this is a company that will promote tag team wrestling as main event level stuff. Oh boy, there's just, you would think that tag team wrestling would be AEW's calling card, but man, have they let their tag team division suffer.
Yeah, it's been really strange. Obviously, FTR has accomplished a lot this year.
And every other promotion but AEW.
Yeah.
That is a whole weird situation. Once again, I mean, I know they weren't necessarily, the Bucks weren't necessarily supposed to get another tag title win, but it still felt like everything was building to the Bucks versus FTR, winner take all, and then we never get that. And now the Bucks are baby faces, and FTR are hanging out with all these minor league belts. Sorry, New Japan. but, you know,
yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly what you do with them. We've got no indication ROH is getting its own show anytime soon. Tag titles are on a couple of baby faces. The Young Bucks just turned baby face. Doesn't really feel like FTR is being put in a position to win the big ones anytime soon.
No, it does not. So it's been curious there. They've, like you said, like AEW, I think they've had more of a tag team presence than the WWE. I'm not sure that it's any more well organized than the WWE, though. And that'll be an interesting thing moving forward too. I think Triple H will stick with the tag team thing a little bit more here moving forward, but we will we'll find out, I suppose. Anything else to cover before we mosey on out of here, Christoph?
I think we're good.
Bell time beer for the show. I realized that I had quite a few of the Sideswipe Brewing El Ocho Mole Brown Ale. It is a nice light beer. It has ancho chilies in it, cacao nibs, and cinnamon. It does have a nice little punch in a sweet, non-hoppy beer. Yes, I do occasionally drink non-hoppy beers, and this is a delicious version thereof. Find them here in the fine city of Columbus, Sideswipe, Ohio, or Sideswipe Brewing. Good gravy, DeFrango. Yeah, suggestion from at DeFrango11 for the Bell Time beer. On the other end, recording with me was at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.